When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the only pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single bite-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4.something Michael O'Neill and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to 4.0 to Pro. My name is Michael O'Neill. I'm a 4.something from Long Beach, California. I am joined by Mr. Scott Fliegelman, touring senior pro and one of the best pickleball instructors in the land. This show is bite-sized tips and tactics. We are going to cover a single pickleball shot or strategy with every episode. And today we're going to talk about pickleball strategy basics. Scott, hello, and why don't you start us off with, give us the whole thing, like give us the overall strategy, first and foremost, of doubles pickleball.
Good to be with you, Mike. Yeah, really fired up here to talk to the aspiring 4.0 to pro. At this level, it's pretty hard to play winning pickleball from anywhere but the non-volley zone. It's pretty darn easy to get there on the return of serve side, and we'll start there. And it's a heck of a lot more complicated to do so on serve. So let's start with the easy part. We really need to be moving forward. That's where we want to go, and we want to hit a deep return. Let's not crowd the baseline when we get ready to return serve. Pickleball courts are notorious for having not a whole lot of room behind their baseline. I use it all.
Yeah, right.
Generally tend to start with my butt on the fence or the net behind me. I can always move forward.
And that's because ideally you want your weight and your body moving forward. Like your goal as the receiver of the serve is to get to the non-volley zone or the kitchen as quickly as possible, right?
Well, it's twofold. The mechanics of the stroke are better executed if my body weight is moving forward. I'm using my center of mass. I'm stepping into the shot. I want to hit a deep return. You know, I want to get that ball back, make their third shot more difficult. So even if my goal was not to move forward next, I still want to be moving forward to hit a really good shot. And then conveniently enough, the next thing I want to do 100% of the time is follow that return of serve up to the non-volley zone and get side by side by my partner, be that first team at the NVZ.
Is there any scenario that you don't want to do that in doubles?
I like to say you need a really compelling reason not to. So I don't want to say never. I was teaching a lesson earlier today and we went over this one thing and I actually suggested you can go ahead and fake not following in a crappy return, but then you might want to keep going anyway.
Right.
You've got to keep in mind that no matter how crappy your return is, it has to bounce on the other side.
So one thing that's cropped up recently is sometimes when I'm on the what we would have called the ad court side in tennis, meaning I'm serving from the left to the right, is I can sometimes impart like some right-handed spin on the ball and really take the receiver out wide.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bit of a special, I got 3 or 4 points in a row doing that against the opponents. And it's because the person on the other end didn't cover the middle. So the guy returning was so far off the court that there was a huge gap basically where he was off the court and his teammate didn't cover. To me, that would be it's not an exception, but it is something to be aware of if your opponents are serving with a lot of spin. As the one who's already up at the kitchen, you may be asked to cover some ground that you don't normally have to do if someone's spinning your teammate really out wide.
Yeah, absolutely. And good for you for taking advantage of that. But it leads right into people ask me where to return serve. And, you know, I say much of the time, high, deep and down the middle. And
yeah.
I'm like, why high? Well, for the scenario you just described, you have to buy yourself some time to get to the non-volley zone. And if I'm playing against you and you're pulling me off the court, I want to buy myself enough time to get comfortably to the non-volley zone, or I'm going to have to run really fast, or both.
It reminds me of the racket prep conversation where like the older you are, the more prepared you have to be for the ball that's coming in.
Sure.
It's like in that regard, if you're older and you don't move so well, the best thing you can do is return a little bit of a floater so it's high and deep. So you actually have a couple of extra seconds to get up to the kitchen versus just kind of driving it and ripping it at them. And then you're caught in the middle, in which case we would have to do our next trick, which is the split step. Do you want to explain the split step?
Let me just back up real quick. I mean, sometimes tennis players prefer the aesthetic beauty, converting tennis players to pickleball, prefer the aesthetic beauty of a low line drive return to serve. And right. In and of itself, that's not a problem. You just better hustle,
yeah.
You know, to be able to follow that in and get to the non-volley zone. So, you know, you're right. If they're young and athletic and 6'4" and can take three steps and right. get to the non-volley zone, then go ahead and rip that return to serve. But neither of us will be
accused of being 6'4". That is true.
No,
we got to be quick. We got to have wheels.
Bit more time, regardless of how quickly we're getting toward the non-volley zone. You know, the 4-0 to pro cannot get away without split stepping, and we can dedicate and probably will an entire show to this really important element of footwork. But essentially, we have the time when the ball leaves our paddle until it is on one of the paddles of our opponents to adjust our court position. In this case, move forward. But when the ball is on their paddle, we would be making a huge mistake to continue moving forward because it makes it a heck of a lot harder to move left, right, forward, or back based on where they hit their shot. So I prefer to look at split steps as a brief hesitation, pause, loading of the springs from which we can then react to the shot much better, unload the springs in the direction that we need to go. And that means you don't have to stay where the split step was placed. A lot of people make that mistake. They split stop. They sink into the court. Yeah, your knees are bent and you're in a ready position, but they hit a floating third and you waited for it to come to you in midcourt. So the split step is a thousandth of a second.
Right.
And you load your springs and adjust your court position accordingly.
That is returning. You've now both gotten to the kitchen. Let's talk about serving. And by the way, everything we talk about right now, guys, every individual shot and stroke is going to be covered on an individual episode. We have third shots coming up right after this show in terms of drops, drives, lobs individually. So don't worry. We're going to cover everything and probably a lot more that you didn't even recognize. So serving now, it's got to start with creating a plan. And you really opened up my eyes to that, which is like not only where you're standing, but talking to your teammate about like, what are we going to do here? Where are we going to go? And how are we going to return our thirds, et cetera, et cetera. So can you talk a bit about a plan?
I will. A plan for the 4-0 to pro must include getting to the non-volley zone. It's not always going to work out that way. When we were all coming up and moving through 3-0 and 3-5, we might have been able to get away with winning points from the baseline or the mid-court, primarily because our opponents weren't that great at volleying the ball. But now that we're over 4-0, if the two of them have made it to the non-volley zone first and we don't achieve neutrality by getting up there to play pickleball with them, then we're not going to win enough points on serve. The plan is neutral is a win. Let's do what we've got to do to get up there and play what I like to call a four-person ritual kitchen exchange.
I sort of call this like, it's almost like you're winning 2 points if you're the server. The first point to win is just getting to the kitchen line. If you can both coordinate and get the right drops and get there, that's a win in and of itself. And then, of course, you got the point itself to win. So you've got a little more work to do.
And I'll add to that, Mike, that if you had two perfectly equal teams, which isn't realistic, but let's assume it is, and the serving team has achieved neutrality and gotten up to the non-volley zone, in my observation, they win 55% of the points. The reason for that is momentum. Things are going well for them. They've achieved neutrality. The serving team wants an extended point. They don't want it to end in 3 or 4 shots. The returning team is looking for a short point. They expect to see a floating third. They crush it, end of point. So I really just think it's a confidence issue. Again, in my observation, if as the serving team, you can achieve neutrality, you might be able to win 55% of those rallies.
One of the cool things I think about serving in general is that you can literally get a bucket of balls and practice your serves. In fact, I don't think enough people practice their serves. Certainly not at the 3-0 level. Once you get into the fours and 4-5s, I don't want to say serving is a weapon because it's tough to weaponize a pickleball serve when you're, as you say, hitting a wiffle ball with a piece of wood or with a stick. But there is something about having a few shots in your arsenal. I like to have a nice drive serve. If you can precisely locate your drive serve, and of course there's a million drills on how to do that, putting water bottles in the corners and things like that. I like to have that in the arsenal. I like to have a one that's new to me, which is a high, this is actually from your video on YouTube, Boulder Pickleball, if you guys don't follow, which is this top spin, high arcing serve, which is way more difficult than people think it is. Because of what you said before, in terms of the length and distance of the court to very often the fence or you know, the tennis net that's in the right behind us. It's not, there's not a lot of room there. So if you get a deep topspin high serve, you've backed them all the way up against the fence there. And it's actually really hard to come in after that. So there's that. And then I like to have this cool kind of slice, this inside out slice that like I said, on the what we would call the ad court, the left to right, brings people off the court and really targets their backhand, except especially for people that don't like hitting a backhand, which is something that I think a lot of people that are early in the 4.0s, you know, like literally a 4.0, really struggle with. They don't have a lot of confidence in their backhand yet. So if you can target that, you're going to do a little better. So I like to have some of those things in the can and then go get a bucket of balls and practice them as much as I can.
Let me share something from one of my coaching colleagues, Travis Rude, that I really like. As you know, once we're at this level that we're talking about 4.0 to pro, we need to act more like starting pitchers as opposed to relief pitchers. Relief pitchers can get by with, you know, the 99 mile an hour fastball, but at this level, as you already, you know, mentioned, we need three or four pitches that we can rely on. My bread and butter pitch that I'll always fall back on is a high, deep topspin serve. But if that's all I do, then they get pretty dialed on that. So yeah. I want to change that thing up. Give them the curve, give them the sinker every now and then.
Whenever I talk to you and I start understanding the level in which you see the game, which is you're obviously a professional, you tour, you're going to be on the new
NPL, National
Pickleball. NPL. So that's the
kind of the MLB for seniors.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's the MLB for seniors. Whenever I talk to you and any other pro, it occurs to me how much more strategy, how many more things they consider than most of us that are playing like rec pickleball. Take any partner and basically hit it anywhere. You don't have a plan to return, don't have a plan to serve, whatever. So can you talk about a little bit about location of serves and how you might strategize with a partner as you enter into a match?
Sure. I mean, you mentioned earlier having a
skirmish.
Plan. I do think that is one of the things the pros do better than lower levels. As the serving team, I've got a pretty good idea of what I want to happen on the first, third, and fifth shot. If necessary, I'm more than happy to call a timeout and discuss that with my partner if we haven't already done so. But in a drilling situation or in a lesson situation, we'll go ahead and speak out loud to each other about what our objectives are. You mentioned, you know, the high topspin serve. The number one priority in serving at this level has to be depth, because of the stopwatch that's running in my head, I want to take pressure off my third shot. No matter which style of third I choose, I would love to see you in the midcourt when I hit my third shot,
right,
as opposed to standing there at the non-volley zone. I have some control over that. I mean, we talked earlier about how to avoid getting caught in the midcourt. I feel like that ball is in my hand to start, and I have some control over where you're going to be when you return the ball. So
right.
I'm going to discuss that with my partner. And the other thing is, you know, we're going to say before we even serve, which one of our shots, you know, forehand or backhand, would we rather hit our third shot with? I mean, this is a big opportunity for improvement for most people. They return to my backhand, which isn't as good as my forehand. That shouldn't happen. If you watch the top pros, they hit their third shot with their preferred wing every time.
Every time.
Every time. And it all has to do with pre-serve alignment. And if, let's say, us two right-handers prefer our forehand, we both line up to the far left of our respective area. When that ball comes back, one of us is going to hit a forehand.
Right.
It'd be great to go ahead and call it, you know, so you can avoid some confusion. But neither of us are going to get stuck hitting a backhand. We're in control of that before we serve. We also should know before we serve where we're very likely to hit the third. And we're very likely to hit the third at the feet of the returner who's on his or her way into the non-volley zone. That's the game plan. I see that happening before we serve.
Right.
Yeah. Again, you need a very compelling reason to do something different.
At that point, we've won the first point, which is to get to the non-volley zone, all four of us. And that's it. I mean, at that point, what did you call it before?
Ritual kitchen exchange.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, if we're lucky, we're there because the third was effective. But more than likely, hey, we're playing 4-0 to pro on the other side. They're not just going to give up that position. We may have some more work to do based on the quality of our third. How low did we get it? How far were we able to advance toward the non-volley zone following the third? And the mistake would be for the partner who didn't hit the third to go ahead and just rush forward in hopes that the third was good. We really have to assess the quality of the third before either of us go rushing forward. In fact, we should never rush forward. You know, let's take our time and move forward. And if the third is okay, you know, we're not out of the point. They're probably going to get the ball at our feet somewhere toward the baseline, and we're going to try again, and we're going to keep doing that until we get the ball at their feet. And then we've moved forward, achieved neutrality, and won that first point.
Right. So there was a great video of, I want to say it was Riley Newman and Matt Wright. They served. There was a return. The third wasn't great. It was volleyed back very hard at their feet. They defended, they defended, they defended. And it was like the fourth shot was a good drop. It took them three or four times to get to a good drop. When they both recognized it, which actually didn't happen until it was past the net, you know, it was already almost at their opponent's feet. They collapsed on it. I mean, they both cut off all the angles and they ended up winning the point, but they were behind for the first three or four shots. So it was really something else to watch and like see all of this executed in real time, everything we just talked about. At that point though, we're there, we're at the line and that's that.
Yeah. And we're talking 4-0 to pro here. And I'm just going to go ahead and strongly suggest that we be willing to scrap it out and win a point that way, as opposed to aspiring to a perfect third shot drop that frequently hits the net tape and comes back on our side. Much rather the way that Matt and Riley did. That third was up a little bit. They, you know, played the 5th, 7th, 9th, 11th, and then they finally got in. We need to look at a point that way at 4-0 to pro.
Especially because cutting down on unforced errors is probably the biggest jump between 4.0 and 5.0.
And I would say a lot of that comes back to the pre-serve visualization.
Right.
We know what our game plan is. We're not going to wing it. We may have to freestyle a little bit later on in the rally, but we have a pretty good idea of what we want to happen, including which player are we going to hit the third at? Boy, there's a whole lot of last second decision making in that area, and there shouldn't be. We should generally be hitting that ball at the feet of the returner.
There should be a plan heading into it. That is overall pickleball strategy. That's episode one. We're going to break down, now that we have sort of this overall show done, we're going to break down very individual shots for the, I don't want to say the remaining episodes, but there's going to be a lot of strategy and individual shots. Make sure you subscribe on whatever podcast app you like to listen on. We're going to have some YouTube stuff as well. So we'll be describing some of the stuff that happens on the show, and then we'll be adding some YouTube shorts and things like that. You can see what we're talking about. Thank you, Scott, for being the co-host. And you guys, thanks for listening. We'll see you at the next show.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.